This is Christian Watson. You're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the Epic Roster Watch Podcast, brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Go to Underdog Fantasy right now. Join the Best Ball Mania contest with $10 million up for grabs, $2 million of that top prize. Use promo code ROSTER for a deposit bonus up to $100 on your first deposit at Underdog Fantasy. Joining me today, one of the big stars, one of the big shining stars of the fantasy football community. You know her well from her work at Yahoo. Her name is Liz Loza. You can find her on Twitter at Liz Loza, LOZA_FF. A bunch of content over there right now. She's also the host of Eckler's Edge with Austin Eckler. And that's coming back for next year, Liz. You guys going to run that thing back?
Yeah, we got a season two. That is exciting. We're going to change the format a little bit. It was a video show in its inaugural season 2021, but we're going to move to a podcast format with video, because every podcast now is like a video podcast, right? Jeez. So we're going to have a podcast and then also have a video show as a companion to it. So we're expanding our reach, hopefully, in season two.
So, and that was one of the main questions that I wanted to ask you, since I know you have this in with Eckler, and I know you can't give away any of your, well, first of all, we were talking about a little off air, and you mentioned that we might be able to kind of get into it on air, but I think that people would be interested. What's it like talking to a professional athlete, a guy that's like really fantasy relevant, about fantasy football, this game that some people, I don't necessarily always agree with the people who say that, you know, it makes it all about the player stats and it dehumanizes them as people and stuff like that. I think a lot of these guys feel like the game brings some extra interest to them and some extra eyeballs to what it is that they do that might not be there, you know, if people didn't have some sort of stake in what it was that they were watching, like they do in fantasy and stuff. Like, what is Eckler like? I mean, he seems like he likes fantasy. I mean, he goes on some of these fantasy shows. He has his own fantasy podcast that he does with you. What is that like talking with an athlete who's like right there in the middle of it, part of the game, as opposed to just another analyst?
It's interesting. I think Austin would definitely agree with you that fantasy has allowed him to have an audience and a fanship outside of his role on the Chargers, right? The Chargers right now are an ascending team. I mean, the AFC West is, my goodness, like, I'm sure we're going to discuss some of that. It is perhaps the most competitive division in football, replacing the NFC West, because basically the West is best, which I say as a Los Angelino. But regardless, so while the Chargers are booming now, it's still not like they get many home games, even when they're home, in terms of audience reach. And so fantasy has allowed him to find new people, and he's very interested, says this regularly, in really wanting to connect with other people. That's a huge driving force in his person and being and connecting. And he has a wonderful foundation called the Austin Eckler Foundation, I believe, and it does a lot of really incredible works for the local community. And that's just a giant part of the incredible human that he is. So fantasy, for a lot of us, we talk about connection and fantasy all the time. And I know that the focus now, for whatever reason, some marketing guru has decided that everybody has to market fantasy as content to help them win. Like, you want to win. But if that were the truth, then people wouldn't be coming back year after year to lose. There's only gonna be one winner in your league, and yet we're doing it. And maybe it's fun to win, but I think the large majority, over 7 million people play on the Yahoo platform alone. And I believe that's the most popular platform.
Oh yeah.
By the far. Most award winning, right?
At least in my anecdotal experience, it certainly is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if 7 million people are playing and it's all about winning, we wouldn't have the retention that we do. And the hobby, sport, whatever you want to call it, wouldn't be growing at the clip at which it is. It's about connecting. And I think Austin recognizes that and really holds it as part of his identity and focus when talking about fantasy and when going on, when starting Eckler's Edge and when going on like at the draft, right? Like he announced a pick of the draft and the Amazon/Prime growth expansion package. And he said, oh, come on. You guys know that even if you're not a fan of my team or the Chiefs, because I believe that's the matchup he was promoting that'll be on the inaugural episode of the Amazon streaming product. He was like, you know, I'm on your fantasy squad. You know, Mahomes is probably on your fantasy squad. Like he gets it.
And yeah.
It's really, I think a lot of the younger players too have been growing up with it. It's interesting. I've interviewed plenty of athletes and some hate fantasy because they feel like, and it's true, the community can be toxic and send nasty tweets or, you know, Raheem Mostert got death threats because he hurt his knee, you know, like people are crazy. And so that is what they see of it. And we need to do better as a community and not treat people like they're, you know, like you were saying, like they're just there for our pleasure and benefit, right? That's not, you can't dehumanize humans and then expect them to feel good about it. On the other hand, those are more of the older players who didn't necessarily play fantasy themselves. I mean, when I was doing that, I had a rookie snapshot series over the month of August, and I'm looking at some of these birthdays, Alex, and I'm like, this fool was born in the 2000s. I was a grown woman. I'm still a millennial, but I was like a grown woman in the 2000s. Like there is no, and these kids were born in 2000. We're going to talk about Isaiah Spiller. Like that man was born in 2001. And so they have just grown up with fantasy in a different way than those of us who like maybe discovered it in the mid-aughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's interesting. And you brought up Spiller. I wanted to say, I was there at the draft, I was doing radio and live streaming and stuff during it. So I didn't get
in
to
Vegas?
See.
You went to Vegas?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I try and go every year that they actually have one, you know, it's been kind of touch and go for a few years here, but it was awesome to kind of see all the festivities back and stuff this year. But you mentioned Eckler made a pick. I think that I heard that Chase Claypool had to make the George Pickens pick, which must have been pretty awkward. I wish I would have been there to kind of see that with my own two eyes. I wonder, did Eckler make the second round pick for the Chargers or
no? He didn't. I don't know. I think he made the, I believe it was the first round pick. It wasn't, I would have remembered if it was Spiller. Is that
okay.
What you're getting at?
Well, yeah. Because like, what about Spiller? Because here's the thing. You know him. I know you're not going to give any inside information about what this dude says off the air and stuff, but like you have all this information that you've, you know, just gotten just even just through osmosis, just being on the show with him the whole time, you know. Is it true with what people say that this guy really wants like a backfield mate? Like is that, do you think that that's true? And do you think that Isaiah Spiller could fill that role maybe better than other guys that they brought? I mean, they brought in Joshua Kelly, Larry Roundtree, both guys from the Senior Bowl in consecutive years that I liked, I thought could maybe make more of a splash. Neither of those guys is, what is your thoughts on this? Do you think that he really does want a backfield mate?
I know for sure that Austin is very transparent. He said this nearly every single episode of Eckler's Edge last season, that he is self-aware and understands that how he is built and is very in touch with his body and does not want a workload that will end up getting him hurt. The best available, like, what is it? The, I forget the phrase that Belichick uses right now, but
your best ability is your availability.
Is your availability. Yes. Yeah. Your best ability is your availability. And you know, in 2020, he had some soft tissue issues, Eckler did. And I think he believes that that was in large part to maybe taking on a little bit too much. I would say that we should applaud that in a player, because still, even if Eckler didn't have, like, I think we were just so volume minded in mm-hmm. fantasy, and we're like, oh, volume, volume, volume. And that's easy math. It makes a lot of sense. But if a player is efficient and doesn't need the sort of volume because they're staying at a level of health that allows them to stay efficient, then we don't need this voluminous amount of opportunities. I would say the comp might be Christian McCaffrey. Like, maybe if Christian McCaffrey were a little more self-aware about what his body could handle, he might be on the field a little more frequently, mm-hmm. right? 2 years in a row, we've seen him get dinged with soft tissue issues and be rushed back. I don't think he can handle the load that he is being given. And I don't think he has the self-awareness necessarily to say, I can't handle it. I also think that, like, that's probably a way that we coach players and raise players and says a lot about youth sports. Like, you're going to play till it hurts. And then these kids aren't able to say, I can't do it. And their careers are often, you know, abruptly ended as a result. So I will tell you that, yes, when I have talked to Austin and said, like, hey, do you want somebody to shoulder the load with you? He is fine with it. Like, he knows he is not a goal line gremlin like Roundtree can be. Now, you mentioned Joshua Kelly and Larry Roundtree. Like, listen, Joshua Kelly was a fourth round pick out of UCLA, but that was under the old regime. Then the team under Lombardi, and we know Lombardi worked with Alvin Kamara, and the skill set overlap between Eckler and Kamara in terms of their pass catching ability and their route running, which is something we don't talk enough about in this new PPR, like popular PPR style fantasy way of playing, is that we know he's going to get a lot of reps as a receiver, even if they come out of the backfield. Like, Larry Roundtree was a sixth round pick. That's not a pretty high investment. I think that Spiller is quite a value. I mean, this was the RB3 on most scouts' rankings, right? Like, almost every single scout had him as the RB3, certainly ahead of Dalvin Cook's little brother, right? The thing about Spiller, though, is that, as I mentioned, he's 20. He will not turn 21 until August. There is a part of his game that you can tell needs some refinement, certainly needs some reps. Like, from a pass catching point of view, though, we also know he converted 74 of 101 targets over his college career. So we know that that is in his skill set. I'm not worried about Spiller overtaking Austin, because I don't think he frankly breaks enough ankle tackles. And I think he's still not settled enough, in his being, and he's got a little, there's some durability, makes some choices that might get him hurt once in a while. And so I think that this pick, my gut is telling me, and I have not discussed this piece of it with Austin, that this pick was an insurance / look to the future pick, yeah, versus a 2022, you are now in a 60-40 timeshare situation.
It makes perfect sense. Because, and then if you listen to what Brandon Staley said after the day three press conference, whenever he talked about, look, we like him because he can do a lot of the things that we want to see out of these guys. He comes from a Jimbo Fisher offense. So, you know, if you just watch him running routes, he's just not just running these routes out of the backfield. He's running these same routes, kind of right, like we've seen Eckler. Like, you run these, exactly, routes that are actual pro routes where you motion out to the slot, you know, and you run the actual routes where you're part of the progression. You're not just the final dump down at the very end, or it's some kind of screen or, you know, jailbreak or stuff like that.
And the only running back that can do that on the Chargers roster has been Justin Jackson, right? And he is perhaps, like, the least durable running, yeah, back that we've seen. I mean, that guy is consistently hurt. Austin, yeah, has been a lot of,
he's
it,
out anyway. And so, like, and Eckler, he's like, the contract he signed, $24 million over 4 years. I mean, next year is the last year that he's on that deal. I mean, I don't know what's gonna, I mean, neither of us know what's going to happen with that, but he's only owed, you know, that final year, he's on a bargain deal, like $7 million. He's getting paid what James Conner is getting paid this year, next year. So it'll be interesting to see sort of what happens with that. But I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be a situation where Isaiah Spiller was drafted to just come in and automatically be part of this committee, as much as Austin Eckler would maybe love to have some of the load sort of taken off him. He feels like a little bit more of a redundant asset to me. So maybe we'll just see all three of those guys or whoever else cobbled together some sort of complimentary time there with Eckler. Okay. What about, so I saw your video with the Eric Edholm, who's been here on the pod a few times, where you guys were talking about Jahan Dotson. You're super high on Jahan Dotson.
I'm super high on his talent.
Okay.
I would say I'm super high on his talent. I think it was probably one of the smartest in real life football moves that a club could make in terms of acquiring a receiver. I think Dotson has, maybe next to Olave, the highest floor of any receiver in this class. Like, he is ready to go. He is, in my estimation, the most mistake-free receiver in this year's class. So if you are worried about an accurate quarterback and you have Carson Wentz and you already have Terry McLaurin on the other side of the field, like, it does, I think that a Tyler Lockett-like career is available to Dotson. But let's also remember that it took Lockett a minute for him to come into his own.
It doesn't feel like the it did take Lockett a while, but we certainly, I think that that's a good, I never thought about that Tyler Lockett comparison. Dotson reminded me a lot, and of course we're talking, Jahan Dotson was taken by the Washington Commanders, I think it picked 16, sort of the last of the top six wide receivers to kind of go there. Do you think that with Dotson, whenever we, I mean, do you, with, because with Carson Wentz, you mentioned him. I didn't quite understand what you're saying, though, because you were saying something about an inaccurate passer. You think that this is good for Dotson because of his ability?
I think that Dotson has the best hands in the class. He has a great ability to separate. He is mistake-free. And I think that he could help. So if you're worried that an inaccurate passer is going to sink the efficiency of your offense,
okay,
because he's just, and I mean, Carson Wentz is going to Carson Wentz at moments, but I think that Dotson can at least save him enough times to keep him reeled in. And so now you have, like, we know what Terry McLaurin can do. We know, we've seen him make those acrobatic catches. I think Dotson adds more balance to the offense, which should help keep Carson Wentz grounded.
I totally get that. Okay. So one more rookie thing. And I've got to ask you about some best ball and redraft stuff.
Like, before we move on Dotson, because I feel like in, you asked in the question, in terms of fantasy, like, everyone is super high on Sky Moore and Christian Watson. And I get, like, the Sky Moore is attached to Patrick Mahomes.
Totally. You know? I mean, nobody, because nobody likes Dotson anymore. I mean, everybody liked him before the draft.
Right.
Then he goes to Washington and nobody likes him. And it's not like any of these other, these other guys. I mean, list them off. Olave goes to Jameis Winston. Like, Garrett Wilson gets Zach Wilson. Drake London gets Marcus Mariota. Like, I'm sure, like, Treylon Burks gets Ryan Tannehill, maybe Malik Willis. It's like, is it like, is Jahan Dotson really getting that bad at down? I mean, Carson Wentz. Yeah,
that's the heart I want to do. I mean, like, I get the Sky Moore, but also Sky Moore is Golden Tate. Like, it's not like Jameson Williams landed in flipping Kansas City, right? Like, I don't think Sky Moore is a ceiling play. Yes, because of his yak, but mostly because he's attached to Patrick Mahomes. And I feel like there's helium added to the equation because of that partnership. And yet I'm not seeing the same sort of, like, downgrade in, I get it. Jameis Winston will certainly feed a receiver, mm-hmm, but we're not sure. Like, is Michael Thomas on board? Like, do we know if Michael Thomas, what his feelings are today? Frankly, I know he tweeted that he was hopeful and happy about them adding another Buckeye and that they have a friendship, but, like, is Alvin Kamara even going to be part of that equation? Like, I like Olave from a volume perspective, and Drake London hasn't been healthy for a minute. he's also proven to produce with some really bad quarterback play at USC. So I get it. But I think that if we're looking at like a pure floor perspective, Dotson, I'm not worried about him clearing 50 catches, right? I don't know if I'm going to get, like, it is possible that Drake London scores 8 touchdowns. It's also possible that he scores 1, like Pitts did last year. Like, remember when we walked into that situation, like there was a world in which we were like, oh, Kyle Pitts is only going to be a touchdown monster. He scored 1 touchdown last year.
And then the Calvin Ridley stuff happened and it was supposed to be wheels up and, you know,
forgot that he's a rookie who's learning the position, and defenses were very quick to take him away. So like, I am high on London, like, but I'm just devil's advocate. We have to like think about all these things. And I think sometimes we just knee jerk, especially if you haven't studied the player and know the eccentricities of their skill set. It's just easier to bypass them because so-and-so is attached to this quarterback, or, you know, is sharing the field with this other receiver.
Okay. So I was going to only ask you one final question about Dynasty to wrap it up. But since we kind of got to start talking about guys who are in, you know, tethered to good situations like Sky Moore. What about Christian Watson? Has the hype gone too far for a guy who, you know, never averaged more than 4 catches a game in college and comes from a small school like North Dakota State and had to stay for 5 years just because he gets drafted, you know, and they did trade up to go get him in this. They traded up to go get him in the second round. Didn't they give away like 52 and 59 to move up in the 40s to get Watson? I could be messing that up, but I'm pretty sure that's right. And he's connected to Aaron Rodgers. And so, and presumably this pick had the sign off of Aaron Rodgers. They have receivers in Green Bay, but none of them really inspire any confidence at all. I mean, you're talking about Alan Lazard looking like he'll be the alpha, assuming, you know, they take care of him post June 1. Do you think that the Christian Watson hype has gone too far now that he's a first round dynasty pick and a guy that's becoming clearly into play in the mid rounds of early best ball and redraft leagues?
I hate the pick. I mean, I grew up in Chicago, so my allegiance to the Bears loves the pick. Not that the Bears have anything. I mean, Minnesota is going to win that division, but, I think
it's, do you think Minnesota is going to win the NFC North?
Yeah.
Okay. That's
I think this is going to be a world of pain. I know no one's expecting it, but like, I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to be in a world of pain. Like, everyone's like, oh, the Packers traded up in the second round to, like you're saying, like to get their guy. Whoa. You mean to tell me that an MVS comp is Aaron Rodgers' guy? Did you not imagine, like, what about the Tyler Dunn article from a couple of years ago? Not to mention the shade that we've watched on primetime television from Aaron Rodgers to MVS every time he can't corral a ball. Christian Watson has a career drop rate of 12.7%. Now, I know that the Packers stands are going to get on their high horse and be like, well, we've done pretty well with later round picks who had bad hands, Devontae Adams. Devontae Adams didn't bust out until 2016. Aaron Rodgers is 38. He does not have the benefit of time on his side. You can go point at Tom Brady and say, oh, it's being done. Or you can point at Drew Brees and say, oh, there was a cliff and he almost walked off of it. Like, this is not the same thing. Christian Watson, and this is where, I mean, I get it. Like, the analytics crowd is like, goes nuts because he really showed out at the Senior Bowl and he crushed the combine.
Yeah.
I mean, what did he end up with? Next Gen Stats gave him
the 99,
like an overall athleticism score of the max of 99. So everyone's going crazy. But again, how many times have we seen high ceiling spark monsters take time to develop because they don't understand the nuance of the game? This is bananas to me. There are over 220 targets available. Absolutely. In Green Bay. We also know that Aaron Rodgers is not a particularly forgiving or easygoing quarterback, and that this could, and that he admitted that when he signed his deal, he was fully expecting Devontae Adams to come back. So, I mean, this feels a little bit like I got my bag and I'll try to figure it out. He also said that he would prefer to have Treylon Burks or Jameson Williams And my question to the Packers is, why didn't you go get them and trade up in the first round and make your quarterback, who again is not the, like, I don't know, biggest wallflower. He's not Matt Ryan, right? Like, he's not super affable. Right. Why didn't you make him happy then? But you're going to wait when you saw all the picks fall out in the first round and be like, oh shit, I guess we got to do something now. I don't know, for a 38-year-old quarterback who's holding a giant bag, that's one way to roll.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs, so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
All very good points, Liz, for sure. All right, so you're not in on Christian Watson. Just one more rookie thing. So if you have to choose one rookie who you're positive, you know, it can just be somebody who you really like. Who's going to exceed expectations? If it's not Christian Watson, you got any of these running backs or wide receivers that we haven't discussed?
Community. Even for redraft, not just dynasty, is largely sleeping on David Bell, out of Purdue. I really like him. I think a lot of people are staying away from discussing him because of the Deshaun Watson specter that looms large over the situation.
And the slow 40, the 4.65. Did he run the 4.65? But hey, like, look, I'll let you talk about it.
High end speed. You're right.
It feels like a lot of the steam came off David Bell at the combine too. I think that there's that kind of cloud. There's also the cloud of Deshaun Watson. Is he going to play? Is he not? But I didn't mean to cut you off.
Deshaun Watson's going to play. There's a report out today. He's not going to face a trial until, if he faces a trial, it's not going to be until the season. He's going to play. Everyone needs to just accept it. Whatever your feelings are about it, you can choose not. You like, also side note, if you don't like it, you don't have to watch it. You have the power of the purse. The power is in your hands. So you don't have to be a part of it if you don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
If we're talking statistically and we're talking talent, Deshaun Watson's a pretty damn good quarterback, which is, by the way, why we're here. And right. Amari Cooper has been added, and Amari Cooper may not have evolved at the pace that so many of us expected out of Alabama, and he's on his third team, but he's still a pretty good route runner, and he's still going to command defensive attention, and that allows David Bell, who I think is probably, it's so trite to say a player plays tough, but David Bell just plays tough. And I think that is a lot of what the culture in Cleveland needs to be centered around right now. He had more, if you look at David Bell, he had more contested catches than Drake London. And every time I hear a fantasy wonk screaming about Drake London, it's about his contested catch ability. In fact, David Bell had 41 since 2019 and he went to Purdue. I think that means something. I think we're probably, to me, David Bell is at his floor Mohamed Sanu, at his ceiling Davante Adams. And if you are going to use the attached to a quarterback argument that we just talked about, then Deshaun Watson can certainly drag him closer to his ceiling than his floor.
That's a great answer. And the other thing is too, is that Andrew Barry at his press conference with Stefanski, he was saying that David Bell is a guy who could play inside and outside. I think they're going to start him out in the slot because they really like him there, just as a ready-made kind of Jarvis replacement. Like you said, tough player, makes the tough catches over the middle, gritty. But he said he could play outside too, which makes you think this is a team that's going to run a lot. If they go to two tight end sets, I think it'll be Amari Cooper and David Bell on the other side, as opposed to a Donovan Peoples-Jones or one of these other dudes. So that'll be interesting to see. They love him though, for sure. And I think that's an excellent call. It's he's because he's definitely being slept on. 100%. All right. What about on best ball? Do you think that, because here's one that's interesting to me is with at the 3-4 turn, two guys with D initial names who I have trouble picking between, and DK Metcalf and DJ Moore. Of course, DK Metcalf, we know no more Russell Wilson. That offense could stink. It's a bad quarterback situation, no matter what happens with Drew Lock or Geno Smith. And then there's DJ Moore, who has another up in the air quarterback situation, but who, you know, consistently gets a ton of targets. He hasn't been the DK Metcalf monster that we've seen. Do you have a preference between DK Metcalf and DJ Moore if you're picking their late third, early fourth in these early best balls?
I love this question. I love a question that I get where I'm like, oh, I got to do some research. I got to think about this one. Okay. So thank you. And I found it interesting because I was like, huh, I wonder what I did in my rankings. Now my like early rankings, my early wide receiver rankings are still being tweaked with. So like, don't everybody listening, don't go out and run. I'm still working on my wide receivers. Running backs are pretty set. Quarterbacks are pretty set, but it's May.
Leave me alone. Welcome to it, man. It's crazy, dude.
I have these guys at my first like run through of wide receiver rankings back to back with Metcalf at 16 and Moore at 17.
Okay.
And I thought about it and I thought like, is Drew, no one's disputing whether or not Drew Lock is a downgrade, but do we think that Sam Darnold is going to hold on to this job, or do we believe it's going to be Matt Corral? And is Matt Corral and or, I almost called him Sam Bradford. that's something.
Close.
Sam Darnold, right? Yeah. Are Sam Darnold / Matt Corral a downgrade from Drew Lock? Also, by the way, DJ Moore, you said it, like, this is another metrics maven, another like spark monster that like hasn't fully put it together, like hasn't hit the ceiling that his measurables would imply is within his skill set. So I'm going to take Metcalf because he has been more consistently amazing than Moore.
I'm looking at our rankings, and I have them ranked too far apart. They need to be ranked a little bit closer. Like, just let me ask you, you have Amari Cooper over DK Metcalf at this point, don't you? You have Amari Cooper over him? I need to get Amari Cooper over Metcalf. I think I need to get Mike Evans over DK Metcalf, which I don't have. But I think I can get him down to, I think I can get him down to around 15 or 16 where you have him. I think that's probably the better spot.
I have Metcalf 16, Moore 17, Cooper 18. So they're all
okay.
In that.
So in the same tier. So we're talking about the same bucket here. Okay. There was another kind of just something. Another guy that's kind of in that bucket, at least if you go by ADPs, is Chris Godwin. And I read this study and I thought it was interesting. It was from the Orthopedic Journal of Sports Medicine by these doctors like Dr. Manor, I can't even pronounce his last name, but it's these doctors from the University of Arizona, right? And this is just interesting for me. Wide receivers coming off of ACL tears and reconstructions. This since dating back to 2006, the yards per reception goes from 12 in the following year. So people have come back, right? But in the immediate return, which on average is 13.6 months, which seemed a lot higher to me than
I think we all think nine months is our assumption.
It doesn't that feel like a trailing average because this thing goes back to like 06, and so there've been advances since then. But still, the yards per reception goes down on average from 12.7 to 9.9. The receptions per game on average goes from 2.9 to 1.9. And receiving TDs on the season goes from an average of 3.7 to an average of 2.12. I just thought, geez, like that's eye-opening. I mean, are people forgetting that Chris Godwin's hurt? Like, are we just baking in the fact that people just not acting like he's has there been reporting saying there's no way he's going to start the season on PUP? I mean, what am I missing here? It feels like people are just taking him a little bit early for dude. You have to, I guess, for best ball, it kind of makes sense because whenever he starts to come back in and play, you can just get that. You don't have to worry about holding this dead weight on your roster. But I mean, how are you going to handle this? And do you think people are kind of forgetting about the fact that this dude's hurt?
I moved him outside of like just outside of my top 40.
All right. So you're not forgetting that he's hurt.
No, I also do a series called Rest versus Rust with an orthopedic surgeon. He's an orthopedic surgeon at USC and the team doctor there. And so I go in depth on a player returning and like use his medical expertise, like your citing. So this year, Chris Godwin is on the list of guys I want to dig in on. I did Kenny Golladay last year and like, I was like, you guys don't do it. Don't do it. I'm telling you, the doctor thinks he has a hip impingement.
It's a good but call. Even if it,
you know, and everyone was like, you don't know anything. They don't pay a receiver this much money. And I was like, the Giants will, but, regardless. So it's a fun series. And I love that you're investigating this. I think we are so knee-jerk about, no pun intended, about ACL injuries in particular, because the recovery time has increased so much. I mean, like OBJ tears his ACL for the second time in the Super Bowl, and we're like, oh, he'll be back by November. Like, and we're already doing the math, which I get, and I think you're 100% right. Like, yes, players come back, but they don't, it takes everything takes time. Evolution takes time. I also think that while the focus has been on Tom Brady retiring and then unretiring, and then again today announcing that he's going to, you know, go to the booth for Fox after he officially retires again, the Bucks have forgotten. We have forgotten that, you know, Ali Marpet also retired, right? Yeah. Like they don't, they got Jensen. They paid Jensen, the setter. They've got Smith, Wirfs, and Kappa all coming back.
But I think, I'm not sure.
Not the same O-line.
Well, is Kappa not, maybe? I think Kappa went to the Bengals. I think that he was part of that big haul. I think it's part of the big one that the Bengals at. But so they're losing him. And here's the other thing that they're gonna have to pay Donovan Smith soon. And they're like, there's all kinds of stuff that's, I mean, for this year they're gonna have their tackles. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting there. Like definitely in the middle with the guards for those guys. It's all things we definitely need to take into consideration. But I'm very interested to hear that. You know, you're definitely lower on God. It doesn't feel like I'm here anywhere.
No,
like,
you know, I think for me, Chris Godwin is like, I'm taking Marquise Brown ahead of him, but like he's in that Marquise Brown type area, but I'm not, but like, I'll take Chris Godwin before I take Treylon Burks, but after I take Marquise Brown, if that makes sense.
Perfect sense. I'm very mindful of your time, Liz, but I want to ask you, I just want to ask you one more question that's on the same thing, and then one kind of two-part question. I'll get you out of here. Just so, are people forgetting about things? Are people forgetting about Alvin Kamara and his Pro Bowl incident in Las Vegas with him punching that porter? Like, did you see pictures of the dude? Like, I think he knocked the dude out pretty well. And I haven't heard anything really about what the NFL is going to do with this. Do you have any insight about like what you think?
They've been occupied.
Yeah, like what you think's going to happen? Or so, I mean, are people discounting? Are people just kind of just shrugging it off, saying, "Ah, it's Kamara. Like he'll be fine. I'll make it work. I'm still taking him in the top six running backs and stuff." To me, it just feels like a giant risk.
Well, I think you're right, but I also feel like that is running backs. Like honestly, outside of Jonathan Taylor, do you feel good about Derrick Henry? Can you feel good about Austin Eckler? We just talked about Spiller. Like, I think so, but can you feel good about Christian McCaffrey? I feel like maybe I feel better about Joe Mixon than most people ever have. You know, I always draft Joe Mixon in like my top 10 and people love to hate on me for it. But it's interesting because I am working on a piece right now for Yahoo Sports about three question mark vets and three rising stars that could potentially leapfrog them. And I'll give you guys the teaser now. It's Derrick Henry and Breece Hall. So like, can Breece Hall potentially outproduce Derrick Henry? And then it's J.K. Dobbins and Christian McCaffrey. Can J.K. Dobbins leapfrog Christian McCaffrey? There's like some overlaps in skill sets here, which is why I was choosing them. And then the last one is, can Travis Etienne, who comped exactly to the ceiling of Alvin Kamara coming out of the 2020 draft process, leapfrog Alvin Kamara? And I mean, I'm going to discover and analyze those pairings in the piece, but for me, I'm a little bit more interested in Travis Etienne than I am Kamara. So I think that answers your question.
I love it. Cause I'm so into Etienne this year. And that article that's out or it's coming out?
No, that will go live. That will publish on Thursday or Friday of this week.
Well, you guys, of course, make sure and go follow Liz on Twitter.
Can you do one more question? Hold on. Before we go out of here, this is one of my favorite questions. No one has asked me this question. And again, I love questions that make me think. You wrote, is there an interesting stat?
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead and ask it. This is my favorite.
Okay. All right. No. It's just for me. It's like, is there a stat that you like it best? Because people like to stack quarterbacks with wide receivers, especially in these best ball tournaments, or just stack team situations. Because sometimes, you know, if the quarterback throws the pass to the receiver, it's just like in DFS, right? In best ball, you want these big, big scores. You want these teams to be sort of associated to where you might double up your points, or, you know, you just stand a better chance with correlating players. So is there a situation, what did I say? Like, is there an interesting stack that you can get a value? I mentioned to you that the pieces associated with guys like Mahomes and Rodgers got cheaper this year. So I found myself being able, you know, before it was like, you got to get Mahomes, you got to get Tyreek Hill, you got to get Kelsey. It's like really expensive to do that. Mm-hmm. Are there any interesting stacks that you've identified?
So let me first say, again, love this question. I love when people make you think strategically in new ways. My answer to this question last year was every piece of the Chargers I can get. And Keenan Allen was at a value. People were still questioning Herbert, you know, like there were some moments here. For me this year, it is the Raiders. Give me Carr.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll take it. Give me Carr. Okay. And I know that we're all like Carr's got this narrative that runs around it. But Carr, what he did last season, given all of the off the field and on the field nonsense that was thrown his way, now he gets Davante Adams. They're not strangers to each other. Fresno State connection is real. And if I could get Carr, Adams, and Renfro, and probably avoid the expense of the Waller piece, that is a value stack that I am very interested in throwing a couple of lineups behind.
Renfro's ADP has just been plummeting too. Ever since the Davante Adams stuff, it's just so you can get, even though Derek Carr is getting a little, I think people are starting to get wise to the Derek Carr stuff, but the Hunter Renfro has been falling. Of course, Davante Adams has been falling. People don't like him, his situation as much these days with Derek Carr as they did with Aaron Rodgers. So that's an excellent – I hadn't even thought about the Raiders. That's a very sneaky one.
What do you think about the Jets if you were to do – I mean, this is like, well, Wilson, and more. Again, yeah. I don't – this is a bigger value. Like, I don't love it necessarily, but if we're, like, throwing darts at ceiling plays, plays –
Yeah, I mean, Elijah Moore's ADP has fallen from Jesus. I mean, Elijah Moore's ADP is now at 59. So we're talking sixth round turn, whereas you used to have to take him at least in the fourth round, you know, before the whole Garrett Wilson thing. So Garrett Wilson himself right now, ADP right at it's not quite as high. Garrett Wilson's ADP is actually fallen. Because people probably, you know, he was being taken at pick 81.5. Now he's at 91.3. People probably think, well, Garrett Wilson, the idea was, oh, Jesus, he's going to Zach Wilson. You know, he's going to the Jets. I was hoping he would, you know, he'd go to the Saints or go to Green Bay, or, you know, he'd fall to later in the first round to go to one of those good teams. So you're getting value on Elijah Moore. You're getting value on Garrett Wilson. Zach Wilson's free. Right. There's a bunch of tight ends too that you could throw in. You mean, what do they brought on? Like Tyler Conklin and a bunch of these guys.
CJ Uzoma.
Yeah. So they Uzoma. I mean, yeah. So there's definitely, I mean, I love the idea of that. Especially when you can make those stacks with the quarterback in best ball that you're gonna be taking as your second quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Because you know that you can just say, like, if this does happen and I do manage to land two of these pass catchers on this team, then I can just sit back and wait till around 14 or 15 to even take the quarterback to fill out the stack. So that's another great one. Liz coming on here with all the sharpest ideas. Of course, you can find her on Twitter at @LizLoza_FF. She is Liz Loza from Yahoo. Bunch of articles coming out. I mean, I think the best way to find your articles is probably just to go to your Twitter, right? Just go to your Twitter and you link everything there. You said there's an author page on Yahoo, though?
Yeah, there's an author page. If you go to my Instagram, so it's @LizLoza_FF on Twitter and Instagram. My author page is linked in my bio on my Instagram bio. So you can find it there too.
There you go. Find it on the gram. All right, Liz, final question. This is the big one. This is the one I said, the people want to know what Liz Loza thinks about the sixth round. And the sixth round So you get out of all the super, super sexy picks at the very top, right? But still important picks to your fantasy football team for best ball and for redraft. I'm going to read you off these names, and I want you to tell me the player who out of this list is most likely to sink your team if you take him at this spot, and the player who is most likely to be a league winner if you take him at this spot. Okay. And so here they are. Allen Robinson, wide receiver Allen Robinson, now with the Rams, running back Josh Jacobs with the Raiders, quarterback Jalen Hurts, Eagles, wide receiver Elijah Moore, we just talked about, Jets, wide receiver Rashad Bateman, Ravens, running back Elijah Mitchell, 49ers, wide receiver Darnell Mooney, Bears, wide receiver Brandon Cooks, Texans, wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown, Lions, wide receiver Drake London, now Falcons, wide receiver Devontae Smith, Eagles, and quarterback Tom Brady, the GOAT for the Bucks. So let's start out with the one that's going to sink people.
Darnell Mooney.
He's going to sink people.
Yeah.
He's going to sink you.
He is. I said it was a Bears fan. You know why? He's not a wide receiver one. I'm sorry. This is another volume play. You don't know the talent. He is not a number one receiver. He is going to be taken away. Our friends in Chicago, my friends in Chicago decided to add Velus Jones, who is, I don't know, my age. It is not a great idea. There is nobody to compliment him with Allen Robinson gone. I think it is disastrous. I am thoroughly disgusted by the lack of investing in Justin Fields. I think Darnell Mooney will sink you. It hurts to say.
There's so many people that love Darnell Mooney. There really are. They're like, I can't believe that he has that many stands out there, but he certainly does. All right. Out of those guys that I mentioned, again, if you want to hear it, you can just listen back to the names I just read off. I'm not going to read them off again. Liz, who out of those guys is most likely to win you your league?
There are 2 to 3, but I'm going to say 2 that I'm particularly high on. I like if I can get Jalen Hurts in the 6th round, now that if that stands, I can't believe that ADP. I'm going to believe that that's because they rankings have not caught up to the AJ Brown addition.
It could be.
And that's going to go up. I mean, I have him ranked inside my top 10. Like, there's no way that you're actually going to get Jalen Hurts in round 6. So I will say Devonta Smith, because while his volume might, I'm also not 100% sure that Jalen Hurts is going to hold the job. We love him in fantasy for the rushing potential, but I'm not 100% sure that he doesn't get yanked at a certain point because he's not the world's best passer. And I think that probably the coaching staff in front office believes that AJ Brown is a physical enough and a polished enough receiver that he could drag any passer into production. And so, so I'm going to say Devonta Smith, also because while his volume might take a hit, I think that Brown and Smith complement each other so beautifully, do such different things. Mm-hmm. And Devonta Smith was not supposed to be the team's X. He weighs 140 pounds. Like, that's not his job. And so last year he was forced into that role. And I think this year you can move him around more. He can be the finesse speed player that he's meant to be with AJ Brown pulling coverage. And so I think Devonta Smith, I love that pick in the 6th round. I think he is a league winner.